This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And extra, extra. We all are fired. I got it like that. Tuck my napkin in.
Gobble gobble, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode number 12 of Place to Be Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines. I am JT Rosero, and joining me as always here on this Thanksgiving week spectacular. Nope, it's not a spectacular. Only one man runs a spectacular. This is the Thanksgiving spectacular. Steve Willey, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm only going to be around for about a minute 32 seconds, though, and then I'm just going to hang up.
That's it. Well, anytime, anyone.
Cash my check.
Yeah, says up against our other man in the booth here. That's all they can stand to be in the ring with him because he just runs through them and destroys them on every podcast and fight and athletic event and trial and tribulation he's involved in. That's Nate Milton, the Godfather, sir. How are you?
I am doing well, Brother JT, and it's good to have Brother Steve back. And I feel in this time of such turmoil in our nation, it's good that we have something where we can all get together and we come from different backgrounds, but we are here to talk about the same thing, much like Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson on Say, Say, Say. That's the metaphor for Clotheslines and Headlines.
I thought it was the black and white cookie.
You go with the black and white cookie, or maybe to tie it into USA, we could be Gus and Sean from Psych.
There you go. There you go. I want to say
Zeus
deep
and the Macho Man.
And Steve Willey is Sensational Sherry.
Yeah, I was going to say I was Bubbles before, but I think I'll take Sherry.
Steve Willey, yes, welcome back. We had a deal with Dan McGinn while you were away, but he did okay.
We're back. So
we're thankful to have you here.
Yeah, that is good. I was watching his boyfriend on Ring of Honor.
Ex-boyfriend.
Oh, that's right. They broke up.
Ended bitterly, if you haven't heard. Very, very bitterly. Speaking of bitter endings, Survivor Series, guys, was a couple nights ago, as always is the tradition for Thanksgiving week. And it was a big one in Toronto. We had NXT, and of course, the pay-per-view itself. So what I thought we'd do is, normally we talk WWE proper in segment one, so we'll get there. Segment two, it depends how you count this. But usually we do some news and notes, but I think the biggest story out there is Goldberg. So why don't we just focus on Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar in this segment here, and then we'll take a break and we'll get into all of the rest of Survivor Series weekend and the fallout on Raw. So I thought the three of us here, and even Dan, were more bullish on this match heading into Survivor Series than what you saw out there from a lot of other people. So I'm curious to get your take on if it met expectations, first of all. So why don't we talk about that, Nate? Did it meet your expectations? Obviously, no one expected that, but just as right. An event. And what did you think of, what was your instant reaction? And then we'll get into the booking and the result in a moment, but just I kind of want your in-the-moment reaction to what was going on.
Well, not only did it meet my expectations, it exceeded them. Because when we were talking about this on the last episode, I liked the build, but I was worried about the match. Mm-hmm. And so the way that they presented this, even though it wasn't a five-star classic by any stretch, I thought they did a good job for what they wanted to accomplish. And you talk about my immediate reaction, I had an instant flashback for just the tiniest minute. It was kind of like the Grinch that Stole Christmas when he hears the Who singing and his old bitter heart grows three sizes. when Goldberg had him down and then one, two, three, my old cynical, jaded wrestling fan heart grew three sizes, because for that split second, it kind of took me back to WCW back in the days when I was a kid and just enjoying wrestling without being so critical and hyper analytical, which obviously we'll get to later on in this show. But I just dug it, and it was a feel good moment in front of a crowd that, much to Toronto's credit, they didn't act a fool.
Yeah, it was. You know, it's funny because I was waiting for the kick out on the jackhammer for sure. I'm like, there was what? I actually went to the bathroom like right in the beginning of the match and came back. And I came back like right as Goldberg shoved him. And I was just waiting for the kick out at two. And I could not believe when it happened. And it took a minute to process what was going on. And like my first thought is Brock leaving? You know, like that's the first thing you think of. Like, are they mad at him for the Randy Orton thing and they're whatever, paying him to go away? And then as things kind of unfolded more and we got into our arguments all across the internet, you know, I pieced together things a little bit more. Okay, you know, maybe whatever. They see more value in Goldberg at this point, et cetera, et cetera. But within the moment, you know, it definitely exceeded expectations. And I think, and, you know, a few of us said to Steve, the way they went about it meant way more for Goldberg to win than if they did a 13 or 14 minute match. And what it took me back to was Backlash 03. When Goldberg beat The Rock in a pedestrian, blah, 13, 14, 15-minute match that nobody even really remembers that ambled along, and then Goldberg won anyway. And I feel like, you know, if they had went that way with this match, it would be the same thing. But the way they did it got everyone talking. It's more memorable. It definitely makes Goldberg coming back mean more in my eyes than if they just had a boring... You know, I just anything that went over 5 or 6 minutes in my mind was probably not going to be great. Mm-hmm. And if you get to 5 minutes, why not just do a minute and a half? You know what I mean? Like, what's the difference? So I thought the way they did it made a lot of sense with the result they were going at. Now, if Brock was going to win, I'd say, okay, you go a little bit longer so Goldberg gets a little shine and then Brock beats him. But if you're going to have Goldberg beat him, I think this way it actually protects Brock as well in a way because – he caught him off guard. He smashed a bully in the mouth. You know, that's always the saying, right? You always got a plan to get punched in the mouth. And, like, that's what happened. That's what unfolded. And I thought it played up with Brock's UFC background. That is usually how guys tend to lose like that. You know, they're, you know, look at Ronda Rousey for prime example. You're arrogant. You're over, you know, you're too confident about what's going to happen. And then you get punched in the mouth and all of a sudden you're on your back. So,
to Brock's credit, too, he sold that. He's not necessarily known as a man who, acts well in with his mouth and his face. He doesn't really have good mannerisms. He's not paid for that. He's just a beast. But after that first spear, he just kind of laid there on his butt, like what his chin was dropped, his mouth was wide open. He's like, what is happening?
Even after the shove, he sold well like that. You know what I mean? Like that reaction, that picture that's floating around, where he's just like, whoa. Like, you know, I did not expect this old man to shove me on my ass. And good for Goldberg too, because he looked awesome. So it helped. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't this saggy old, you know, Roddy Piper in 2008 or whatever. You know, like looking all out. I mean, he looked ripped and shredded. So, mm-hmm. It at least was believable, even though he's older, that this jacked up guy could smack this guy in the face and you know, catch him off guard. So, to me, at least that part was believable. What was your instant reaction to it, Steve? Well, I guess you watched it the next day, right? So, it wasn't too instant.
Oh, no. I actually, I did watch that right away. I watched the big Survivor Series match and Goldberg match right away, and watched it live. And I was stunned. I realized as the jackhammer was happening that was it.
Right.
And it's like, I expected like Brock to like knee out of the jackhammer and like throw him like 16 times with a German suplex. And then, not sure what was going to happen next, but I was stunned. I just kept thinking like, what a piece of business, what a piece of business. And I was standing. I was shocked, and like immediately, you know, went to see what you guys were like. Went on the internet.
Did you immediately sign off when you saw what was going on?
Okay. Yes, I did. I saw paragraphs of pontification. I'm like, nope. I'm just gonna take this moment and think about it later.
I mean, so to me, the biggest bitch I've seen, and I think it's extremely valid, is that Brock Lesnar hadn't lost in years, and this is who they had him lose to. I think most people in a vacuum were okay with how the match itself went down. At least I hope so, because I feel like the moment in a vacuum was awesome. Like, we never get anything like that. I spent, you know, a day with Chad Campbell going back and forth trying to say, you know, what other squash, is this the most memorable squash in wrestling history? Is this the biggest squash? And the only ones we could come up with were, you know, Ultimate Warrior and Honky Tonk Man, Sheamus and Daniel Bryan. You know, there might have been one other one, but like nothing had the stakes of this, like, or at least the gravity with the big names, the main event. So to me, in a vacuum, the booking of this was fantastic because you just never expected it. You never saw it coming. And, you know, kind of kudos on them because they sucked you in by having it start around like 10:20 or whatever. So you never expect the match to only go a minute because the car, you know, Sir Show is supposed to go to 11. So you, when they came out at that point, because all through the night, everyone's like, whoa, we got, you know, this much time for this many matches. So when it got to that point, you're like, oh, it seemed like it was going to go at least 15 minutes at that point. So that's why it was even more of a shock. You know, it's not like it was 10:50 and they're like, oh, they're going to have to rush this thing. So I think in a vacuum, the booking was fantastic. And I haven't seen many people debate that. How about you, Nate?
I agree. And, you know, in terms of the time factor, I was caught by surprise by that. But when you think about it, they front-loaded the thing, and you know, with the damn pre-show that I'll gripe about later. That might have been my biggest bitch of the of the evening. But, yeah, it's a problem if you're looking forward. Always forward.
Or
to,
backward.
I was going to say, always forward to shout out a great podcast that I have no affiliation with whatsoever. But I think it's a problem that WWE's created because they have not done a good job at really making credible stars that you would buy against Brock Lesnar. And the one guy that they've said is toe-to-toe with Brock is the guy that the fans don't want, and that's Roman Reigns. So if you're going to sacrifice the long-term profits for the short-term gain, which this is certainly a short-term gain looking at the age of Bill Goldberg, I think he's the guy to do it with because it's not just the name. You know, it's not just that they pick some guy out from the Monday Night War era. It's the mystique. It's the fact that he's somebody that kind of transcends to casual fans. It's also the fact that he's been cutting some of the best promos of his career in the past couple months. And I think that all that together, plus the story of, you know, him and his son and his wife and that human interest that people can relate to, I think that that's a reason why it resonated so much and it will continue to resonate. So I think long term, they probably could have done better, but given the cards that they've dealt themselves, this is probably the best way to go.
I mean, do you think at this point that it's see more money in Goldberg than Brock? I mean, Brock has been diminishing returns. They're paying him a ton. He hasn't really moved the needle. Do you think they looked at Goldberg and said, hey, you know, this is maybe lightning in a bottle, maybe having him destroy Brock and then getting a two-match run out of him at the Rumble and into Mania, and then we can sell him at the Hall of Fame, and now, you know, his name is even bigger now with fans of this generation because they just watched him destroy Lesnar. So do you think they saw him as a bigger monetary bankable star than Brock, Steve?
I think they did after he appeared on the first Raw when he got that kind of response, because it was talked about, I think it was Figure Four, like Meltzer and them, talked about how he was just recently signed to more matches. So it was right around the time of this past weekend with Survivor Series that they signed him for that. So I wonder if they changed what they were going to do. Maybe it was going to be with that 13-minute match. Maybe Lesnar was going to win.
Well, the betting odds swung on Sunday, like kind of late. And the word is that Goldberg signed that day. So maybe, maybe Brock was going to win until he signed that contract.
And it is, and you know, Jerry, we talked about this. I think right before when he debuted. I got a text from my wife's friend from work, a female friend. I don't think she's ever texted me in the 6 years. Yeah, I know. This is pretty exciting for me.
All right. You want to talk more about this on air?
See, my wife doesn't listen to this stuff.
Okay,
I mean, seriously.
Being recorded. It's going to be permissible in court one day, I'm telling you. Go ahead.
You could email this to her and she still wouldn't listen.
All right, go ahead.
The 6 years I've known her, I don't think I've ever received a text from her. And she just told me to turn on wrestling because Goldberg was going crazy. And I didn't even know she watched wrestling.
Right.
She's a 40-year-old woman. And so that just shows the appeal he does have. It, like you said, Nate, it takes you back to a different era, and he does look legit.
Is he the last – I mean, if you think of all the stars, is he the last one that has this kind of mystique and money potential behind him?
Well, I think that was
Austin.
Proven as being, right?
Yeah. I mean, is Austin the only other one?
Well, and Rock is kind of, as we saw in WrestleMania, you know, that's kind of the horses left the barn, so to speak. And
yeah. Even Austin, I think, may have come back to. I mean, an Austin match, I guess, would be the only thing. But I think Austin himself, the mystique isn't as strong anymore. I mean, I don't think anyone. What do you think, Nate? Is anyone on Goldberg's level right now as far as, you know, bankable veteran mystique or, you know, whatever, legend mystique?
No, all the big ones have been checked off. Like, you know, we had Sting last year. We had Goldberg this year.
Bret Hart's done.
Yeah, Hogan's done. Hogan should be done.
Yeah, I mean, even if he comes back, he's not going to, you know, it might blip, but not like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, to me, Goldberg is, and I don't know if ratings even went up. I mean, we may be overstating, but just the aura, I don't think there's anyone else.
Honestly, outside of some type of dream match combination that you could put together, like maybe a Daniel Bryan, Kurt Angle.
Right.
Which would never happen. Like, I don't think there's going to be anything for the foreseeable future that can top what we've got with Goldberg now, because
Punk,
all of your guys from that time period are either A, they've been overexposed over the years, or B, their bodies are just broken down.
Punk, maybe?
Depends on the match, and depends what they do with them, and depends how much they let him say. Punk is a kind of a divisive figure, especially after the UFC stuff. A lot of people jumped off his bandwagon.
Right.
Punk, yeah. Brock would still sell, though. I think that'd be something that would get casual fans or lapsed fans back into the product.
So let me ask this. If not Goldberg, you know, Brock's been undefeated all this time. And if you say, because Goldberg's short-term, even though he, you know, is going to be in position to maybe help draw a big gate of Mania, or at least draw, you know, a number of viewers or whatever. If you're looking at it from a future point of view, is there anyone on the roster that you think could have really been, A, believable, and B, gained the most cred from that exact booked match against Brock Lesnar?
Hmm. Well, it's a couple different questions, though, JT, because I think that there are guys who I think could benefit from this, but when you have Goldberg, you've got a mainstream component that nobody else in the company had.
Right. But say Goldberg come back. So say they decide that, you know what, or Goldberg says, I only want to wrestle one match. I don't care what you're throwing at me or who's doing what, and I'll lay down. I don't care. Right. So whatever. He has his one match. Like, just say, for humor, humoring me. Like, I'm not saying they made the wrong call on what they did, but say that Goldberg was the wrong call. Like, is there anyone that could have benefited from this more?
You already know my answer. Like, and it ties into Goldberg because, obviously, as we've learned, fans love chance. So we can go from Goldberg to Joe's gonna kill you.
Mm-hmm. So, but to me, is Joe, and maybe I'm underselling Joe, what does he have in the tank? Is he the guy that's worth ending that run of Brock Lesnar on?
He's got more left in the tank than Goldberg, God bless him. But, you know, you can get at least a couple more years out of Samoa Joe on the main roster.
Is Nakamura a better choice than Joe to have done that?
Possibly.
In the conversation.
Yeah, that could be. The one thing I think you'd run into with Nakamura, and, you know, he's great. I love him. He's decent height-wise, but I think he's going to look like pretty small compared to Lesnar. It might be a little less believable. You know, the Goldberg match, it seemed believable. Like you said, he's in good shape. Like, he was about the same height, about the same weight. Like, it looked believable. Like, he looked in better shape than Brock, to be honest.
But, I mean, it's kind of sad that no one on the main roster is the first names out of our mouth. I mean, who, you know, like, I mean, you know, like, AJ Styles isn't going to do that. AJ's awesome. Like,
yeah.
Cena, that'd be a waste. Like, Orton, that'd be a waste. So it's kind of like, who...
Owens, maybe?
It's not. But they booked him not in that way, you know?
Right.
And that's the problem. Right there is the problem.
But this works. The way they're booking him, he's so good at. It's tough to say, like, you want to see him be like a... I mean, I know it's his thing, but the prize fighter. Like, I don't know. Like, could you picture him smacking Brock in the mouth and then powerbombing him? I mean, maybe, but I don't know. Like, I'm not trying to fat shame him. I'm just saying.
Outside... not an outside name, but you know, maybe something we wouldn't think of right away. How about Rusev?
Yeah, I mean, I love Rusev.
I mean, that would put him, even if he was booked the way he is right now, and then you like just put him in this match on like a... I mean, it's not going to be a Survivor Series main eventing, but all of a sudden he starts. You know, Lesnar's arrogant. Rusev, size wise, would be believable as a big time lifter.
Is he believable
as able to throw him around?
Is he believable as a top guy? Like a franchise guy?
nobody
is, right? So what I'm trying to do is basically take us in circular logic to say what Nate said 2 minutes ago. Like, nobody's probably a better judge. Right? Because, I mean, the big complaint was that they wasted this on Goldberg. And I've been trying to rationalize in my head, like, who is it? Like, who is the guy that would have really benefited from this? And, I mean, the only guy I can think of, like, besides, like, a Joe or Nakamura, who I don't think even need it, is Reigns. You know what I mean? Like, that's, to me, that's the guy, but forget it. The crowd's done with him in that role. And if I'm them, I'm going to fantasy book for a minute, which I know I shouldn't, because then I just get mad at everything. But what I would do is you have Goldberg in the last couple in the Rumble with his kid ringside. He wants that shot at the title, and Reigns eliminates him as a face, get the fans booing him even more. And Reigns is like, what the fuck? This old guy is like trying to take our spots. You know, you hate me this bad that you'd rather cheer for this part timer to come in and, you know, whatever. Like, and do the turn that should have happened multiple times and just have him finally snap and beat Goldberg at WrestleMania as a dick heel. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I would do with him if you want to salvage Reigns. Now, the people are maybe done with Reigns. The fans are clearly done with him, and they've done him no favors in this company, because they made the biggest mistake of their lives back at Rumble 15, and they've paid for it ever since with Reigns, because they've enabled the fans to shit on every single thing he does, even when he has great matches, even though he's one of the best guys on the roster in the ring at this point, and he's believable in what he does and works his ass off in a lot of matches. They just don't give him a chance. I mean, he's booed from the minute he locks up till the minute the match is over. And, like, unless you get them to fall asleep at the wheel for a minute, and then, you know, it sounds like the Shield reuniting and they suddenly pop for it because they don't realize what they're doing. But I think the Reigns train is gone. So with him out of the way, I just think it's a long-winded way to say I think Goldberg may have been the best choice for this. And it sounds like you agree, Nate.
Yeah, and I like how you said what I said, just less efficiently. you're right, though. You're right, because the thing with Reigns is, outside of the bit with Triple H and Vince McMahon, like, they had to go to that level to get people to actually cheer Roman. And even then, it wasn't so much support of Roman. It was anti-Trips or anti-Vince. Right.
And not even a lot of the time with Triple H. I mean, he was getting cheered part of the time, or even a Mania, you know?
So I think, man, they have to stop being so stubborn. And when I say they, I think we all know who the bulk of that blame is being pointed at. Like, they got to stop being stubborn and just go ahead and take the loss in their eyes for the short term. Because once you get Roman over as a heel, you can always eventually down the line come back and he'll be a true babyface, somebody that the fans actually can identify with. But right now, trying to force feed this guy to the audience, it's not working, and it won't work.
And the Reigns Lesnar match, if Reigns can be rehabilitated, is still there with Lesnar, because Brock has never beaten Reigns.
Right. So let me ask you this, Steve, because this is kind of the other talking point that was out there. How much does this really hurt Brock's aura? Because I would argue I don't think it does. And that's more emblematic of my thoughts on the booking and in the landscape of WWE, which we can get to. But I don't think it hurts. Like, I think Brock, if he goes away for 2 months and comes back and has a feud with someone else, like, it's not all of a sudden, oh God, Brock is terrible. Like, he lost in a minute and a half to Goldberg. Like, I don't believe him as a monster anymore. Like, to me, he can come out and ragdoll James Ellsworth for 3 minutes and be a monster again. You know what I mean? Like, to me, this didn't really hurt his aura, even though maybe you wasted the undefeated stretch on Goldberg, if you feel that way. I don't think it hurts him as a monster.
So, man, I've thought about this a lot the last couple days, and I have a few ideas. First of all, you know, I went with the original thought process that a lot of have, that you were saying that it kills Brock's momentum, that it kills his undefeated streak. And then today I went back and I looked who he has beaten. He beat Randy Orton twice, Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper, Rusev, and Sheamus. That is who he has beaten this year. None of those names really stand out as top guys right now that have been buried. You know, Randy Orton is... you know, hasn't really done much. Dean Ambrose maybe is the only one. He's the, you know, the number two, but that was a, you know, the WrestleMania match. And even chasing back to 2015, outside of The Undertaker, he beat Alberto Del Rio and the Big Show.
And you could argue the matches of Triple H, his losses there stand out more than the wins in your mind. I mean, so they, and did it really affect anything? No. I mean,
no.
That seemed
awful
at the time.
Over 3 years ago at this point.
Right. And that seemed awful at the time. They did a good job rebuilding him since. But, I mean, I think since he killed John Cena at SummerSlam 14, I mean, I think he's been booked poorly since. So,
yeah.
To me, for them to blow it off of Goldberg here, it's not like they destroyed some super well, awesome booked angle, and now I had the shit finish. You know, it's not like it was whatever. Not even that the Evasion was booked. I'm trying to think, like Triple H and Angle, and you know, something like it was a really good angle, but they fucked up at the end. Like they fucked this up from the beginning. So at this point, it's like whatever. If they see money in Goldberg, then yeah, let him be the guy.
Mm-hmm. And the two other things I thought about with this too is not just who his opponents were, but in terms of storyline purposes. He kind of exists on an alternate timeline. He does not exist in the normal continuity of WWE since maybe this whole year, but definitely outside of Fastlane and WrestleMania, because there hasn't really been a storyline that interacts with the WWE universe. The Randy Orton thing was like not for a title. It just kind of stood on its own. It wasn't even, didn't even seem like a real match, to be honest with you. It just seemed outside of that. This match kind of seemed outside of that. It just didn't really affect the WWE storylines outside of that one particular match, where in the other ones, you know, Owens and Rollins and AJ, you know, all that stuff crosses over into actual television. This just stood on its own.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and, like, and Brock, go ahead, Steve.
And this is the one other thing. I think they're pretty much just working Brock Lesnar's contract dates out at this point. The other thing is, I was looking up that since March, three of his matches of his six matches have been in Canada. The other fourth was in Minneapolis, which is basically his home. And then you had WrestleMania and SummerSlam, the two big events. He hasn't performed outside of that. So they don't even really care enough to fly him in anywhere. I mean, maybe that's part of Brock's deal, but they didn't do that before.
Well, I think it's a couple things. One, it's that financial aspect that you just brought up, Steve. You know, how much value is there still with Brock Lesnar? I think he's still valuable. The question is he worth the money that they're currently paying him? The second thing is, when it comes to wins and losses, Brock is pretty much Teflon at this point. Because, A, the damage has already been done, like JR said. But also, when you look at who can attract outside eyes, which is still a big deal for them, particularly when you talk about the partnership with ESPN, Brock still, if not the top guy on that list, in the top two or three. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, like, pretty much anything short of him losing in 2 seconds to Braun Strowman, which even then I don't think would hurt Brock all that much. Like, maybe a loss to James Ellsworth would kill the mystique of Brock Lesnar, but pretty much he's untouchable at this point.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I mean, you know, my bigger issue with WWE booking is that they've just set up this atmosphere and this world where wins and losses don't matter. And, you know, we bitch throughout the year, people bitch throughout the year, off and on with matches where, you know, going back to WrestleMania, remember when Chris Jericho beat AJ Styles? You would have thought it was the worst thing in wrestling history that happened that day. And at the time it was, I mean, it seemed awful, but you know what? Within less than a day, AJ Styles was heated back up on Raw the next night, won the number one contender, and then had two awesome matches with Roman Reigns. And now is legit the face that runs the place. You know, he's their top dog right now, pretty much, with John Cena out of the way. So it's like they can do what they want. And my whole stance is, why, why do we get so angry when guys lose matches in the world of WWE? Or why are we so surprised when it happens? Because they've been shitty bookers for almost a decade now. You know, these guys that they should have utilized better. We saw it for a handful of years, from 2007, 8, 9, 10. Think of all the guys. Like, Daniel Bryan, he broke down by the time they fucking pushed him because he dicked around on the roster for 5 years. They could have pushed him in 2010, you know what I mean, and had 5 years of him being a star. and they waited around because they don't know what they're doing a lot of times with the booking of these storylines. And the last couple of years, they've been so focused on booking for the moment, booking for the highlight, booking for the soundbite, booking for the clip on SportsCenter, booking for the WrestleMania moment, the star-making moment, that they never actually capitalize on making guys stars. And they don't build guys up believably. So my issue isn't that guys are jobbing because, yeah, it's stupid the way they do things, but it's how they do things, and they don't care. They don't care if Brock Lesnar loses this match because they think in 6 months from now, they're going to just push the hell out of him again and lie. And, you know, it's such a – people forget. I mean, you forget. Like, how many people remember even what went down in February this year? Like, do you remember what happened at Elimination – or whatever the hell the February pay-per-view was? Was it – no, I don't even remember, know what pay-per-view the name – Fastlane? Do you remember what happened at Fastlane? Like, you know, would you have – if you knew Chris Jericho and AJ Styles, well, I don't know, you know who won that match. Like, stuff moves so fast because there's so much content – that they can lie and make shit up and do whatever they want. And, like, they don't care. The people that follow the continuity like us, they don't give a shit about. And I'm not saying what they do is right in any way, but that's what they do. That's how they live. That's their booking philosophy. Every day is like a new day in their mind. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing that really builds on the past unless they want it to build on the past. If they want to reset everything tomorrow, they'll reset everything tomorrow, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think they've beaten us into submission because I think my angriest point with the company might have been at WrestleMania when Triple H beat Sting, and they've steadily beaten that fire out of me.
I mean, they've turned us into fans that watch for individual moments. That's what they wanted, right? We watch for the big, shocking one match or the one five-star match because there's so much talent these days that every show is riddled with three-star matches, three-and-a-half-star matches, where we were thirsty for that in 95. 90, like, those days, like, you would kill for a fucking three-star match on TV. And now you get, like, five of them a night on Raw. And it's like, whatever. It's all the same. You can miss a week. You can miss 3 weeks. You can miss a night. You can miss an hour. And you don't really miss much as long as you catch the moment. And they do a good job of at least making sure you see the moment if something big happens. But what they've done is rendered their TV shows missable. And I've said that multiple times. And nothing just really matters besides a great match here or there and a cool, unique moment here or there.
Man, you got fired up. I think what they have figured out is it's almost like the new Carney days. They have us all.
Right.
They have the people who are going to watch every week, no matter what, that are going to watch all the shows, that are all in on everything. Every time I think I'm out and I take away, like, you know, prep that I do for the shows I'm on and stuff like that. Every time I think I'm out, I'm like, you know, I'm not going to watch this anymore. They'll do something like the Cruiserweight Classic. Well, first it would be NXT. Then, like, oh, the Cruiserweight Classic. Oh, man, now I'm going to start watching Raw. The Cruiserweights are on it. And then they're in 3-minute matches. Ah, man, I'm done with that. Oh, wait, Goldberg's back? I'm going to check this out. Okay, that's done. Wait, now the Cruiserweights are going to be on their own show again, and maybe that will be different? I'm back in. You know, they have this way of appealing to the people who, like us, who are watching, or the hardcore fans. They give us a little bit here, a little bit there. We're not going away. I haven't unsubscribed from the network since the day it started. And I'm like, WWE is probably like my fourth favorite promotion in terms of mainstream out of the four I watch.
I think that's their goal in creating so much content is it becomes missable, but they also know they'll probably catch you with something.
Right.
You know, like they know you'll tune in for something at some point because there's so much of it and there's so many good guys involved that something will, you know, pique you.
Yeah, if I don't have this show to prepare for, I, you know, usually like the day of, like someone will say, hey, check out these matches on the pay-per-view, and then I can go and watch that. Where obviously I would never do that if I was paying $30 or $60 or whatever for a pay-per-view. But now, like, it's, you know, it's two cups of coffee pretty much.
You know, Vince is a dealer, man. He's got a lot of product on the street. And I think they've done a really good job at making everything big, but making nothing important, if you know what I mean. Like, everything's an event, but at the end of the day, there are very few things that actually matter and carry over from 1 week to the next or from 1 month to the next or from year to year. So they can string you along. You know, they're very much like, you know, I know I just said he was a dealer, but he's also a pimp. You know, he's also like Ike Turner in What's Love Got to Do With It. Like, come on, anime, baby. Just have one piece of cake, anime. And just keep stringing you along. Like, hey, come on, Steve. I know you don't like Rob, but we got these cruiserweights over here, baby. Oh, I know I ain't going to do shit with him, but we got a new cruiserweight show coming on the network. Are you going to like that?
And Triple H is booking that one. You're really going to like it.
Right. You love Triple H, don't you? Hey, you like Sting, don't you? We're going to put him at a table for three with DDP and Big Van Vader. I know you're gonna love that. Like, Vince knows that he's got everybody, man. He's got the hardcores, he's got the smarks, got the casual fans.
They've done such a good job. You know, I'm coming around on the whole, like, him and Triple H are in on everything to the point where you know, the stuff that they want us type of fans to like, they just attach Triple H's name to as booker or producer. So, you know, we're duped into fucking buying it. It's like, oh, well, 205 Live is Triple H's show. It's gonna be good. The, you know, he was behind the Cruiserweight Classic. Vince didn't even know it existed. You know, like that shit that gets leaked out. I mean, it's the same thing, right? It's puppeteering. It's they know it. Like you said, you nailed it. It's the new Carney, and everyone thinks they know it. Like, they talk about the banter and the business and the insiders. You know, and we're all the boys. Everyone knows the boys. But at the end of the day, it's still just getting worked over. And you can think you know as much as you know, they're still just manipulating the fuck out of everyone. It's just a different manner because we know it's fixed, so they can't get you to buy in anymore to wins and losses. I mean, we get upset about wins and losses, but we get more mad at who booked the win or loss or why they were chosen to lose or the style that they lost versus a guy losing the match. So it's the new, you know, it's the new Carney. In 1985, I got, or whatever, 1990, I got mad when Brutus Beefcake lost the match because Brutus Beefcake lost the match. These days, I would get mad, you know, that Danny O'Brien lost the match because he was booked to lose a match and he looked awful doing it. You know, it's like, it's just the new way to get worked up and to get worked over. And that is that the management, the booking crew, the booking committee, Vince McMahon are the heels and everyone else that we like are faces. You know what I mean? Like, that is what the new world is that we live in the world of wrestling.
I think we're both just stunned that someone was actually invested in Brutus Beefcake matches.
He's my favorite in 1990.
I was just letting it sit and breathe a little bit. Cause,
I mean, do you agree? Like, do you guys, I mean, you can disagree. Like, I don't know. Do you feel that that's just what wrestling is now because we're so knowledgeable about the business that the new way for them to work us over is to make, you know, whatever, they're the bad guys, basically. So they, you know, we vent at them because they're making our favorites lose versus our favorites losing, upsetting us.
Well, it's pretty much like the way that someone like the Kardashians use TMZ, where we think we've got access, and we do, to a greater extent than we've ever had as fans and as people that follow and cover wrestling. But there's always a storyteller. And if you're not on that side of the ledger, if you're not on that side of the transaction, then you can only take, you know, the information that you receive or the sources that you have with a grain of salt, because at its heart, at its core, this is still a business of illusions. And so, yeah, even though, like, the three of us might know a little bit more than fan X, Y, or Z, we're still getting worked. And that's part of the fun and also part of the frustration that keeps us addicted to this cycle of pain.
And I do think there are tiers of fans. You know, I think you have your families that go to the house shows. You have us that they give us, you know, now they're giving us NXT the night before these big events. So, hey, you know, since we're going to travel, we know a lot about everything. We can do all, you know, we could do this Ring of Honor show. We could do Evolve. We could do this meet and greet because we have more access to the wrestlers. You know, we know the wrestlers now because they're on the network or they're on a podcast. So we know who
they're having breakfast with Papa Hales.
Yeah. I thought Papa Hales was the champ. You know, so we have, you know, we think we know all about them. We want to be closer to them. So we'll pay for the big experiences, you know, our type of fan. You know, we go out and do podcasts and then we fly across the country for events.
Right. Yeah. You know? I mean, and one of the smartest things they did was, while it diluted the show from what its original concept was, and maybe what was the original concept, is making WrestleMania a festival destination that tracks all of these other events and all of these other promotions and fans from around the world. And it's this big, huge, mega concert-like festival that happens over a three-day week, you know, a four-day weekend or whatever, that draws tons of money. And now they're like, fuck, we can do this for SummerSlam. So, you know what? That worked well over the last few years in Brooklyn. Hey, let's do it for Survivor Series. You know, let's do it for the Rumble. Let's make them all, let's sell travel packages. It's, I mean, to me, that was, that stuff's brilliant. Like, to make that, this festival atmosphere around four times a year, once a quarter, is just these huge shows, that are become weekends, a weekend events. And then the rest of the shows are the, you know, single brand, smaller events. I mean, this, it's a smart structure. I just wish they would give us storylines worth wanting to see on these shows. All right. So really quick before we wrap up the segment, Nate, where do you see Goldberg going over these next two matches? Like, if you had a guess right now, what does he do at the Rumble and what does he do at Mania? And is he going to the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think he loses the Rumble and he's probably going to lose it in some way, shape, or form due to Brock Lesnar's involvement, which leads to a big match at WrestleMania, which Brock will probably end up winning just because he's the guy, even with his value not as high as it once was, he's going to be the guy that's going to be sticking around longer than Bill Goldberg. And I think that's the longer match that most people thought they were going to see at Survivor Series. And then, yes, Bill Goldberg goes into the Hall of Fame, where he is inducted by that man called Sting.
What do you think, Steve?
I'll be contrarian and just say he wins the Rumble and goes on to face Brock, who will have some sort of championship by then. Wow. Whether it's the Universal or the SmackDown one.
I like the idea of Goldberg winning the Rumble. I mean, you've come this far now. Like, you've kind of committed to making him look like a beast, right? So why not have him come in at 28 and win the Rumble and tell the story of, I've kind of started this new streak, I'm 2-0, maybe give him one more win somewhere on a special or something, but if not, you have him fight the champion. And I think a really cool story is you have Brock force his way into a title match just so he can get a shot at Goldberg at WrestleMania. So you do it after Goldberg wins the Rumble. He doesn't really need Brock anymore. He's beat him twice. He doesn't give a shit. He just wants the title. So you have him set up, and then you have Goldberg show up on Raw. And this is how I would do it. I would have Jericho end Kevin Owens' streak. Not streak. Kevin Owens' title reign at the Rumble. Have them finally split, and Jericho beats him. And then Brock shows up and bullies his way into a title match with Jericho and just destroys him so he can get his title match with Goldberg at Mania. And then you do the streak, new streak, career versus title, however you want to do it. And Brock beats him to retain. So you turned me on to that idea, Steve. I like it.
Excellent.
You've come this far, Goldberg. Just give him the win. I think we're more likely to see it Nate's scenario, which would be much less exciting. Even though Chad was trumpeting a Goldberg Undertaker match, which I think would be kind of cool too.
I think in 2007 it would be awesome.
Yeah, whatever. We thought that with other stuff too. I mean, right? I mean, yeah, I'd rather keep those guys contained in a way. You know, like whatever. Let them. But I think Goldberg Brock rematch. I mean, I don't think Brock lays down in a minute and a half if there isn't future plans for the two of them to fight again. Even though I think it should be over with. But if you could put a reason, because why would Goldberg have any reason to accept the match unless Brock has the title? Like, you need to give him a reason to do it. And we can talk more about Mania in a minute, but I think if you run Goldberg Brock for the title and AJ Cena and their big blow off for the title, like, it's a pretty good top two matches. But there are other rumors for Mania. We'll get to it a bit. So why don't we take a break? We're all going to cool down, mainly me. Listen to Kevin Kelly talk about all the different feeds here in the world of Place to Be Nation. And we'll come back. We'll talk about the rest of the Survivor Series and NXT and kind of where things are headed towards us.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
At first I was afraid, I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong.
All right, Place Nation, we are back. I hope you're enjoying episode 12 here of Close Eyes and Headlines, our Thanksgiving episode. We'll get into a little bit of turkey talk toward the end of the show, but why don't we head back to the weekend? We're not going to talk Goldberg Brock in any way. We're going to talk a little NXT TakeOver at Toronto, and then we're going to talk a little more Survivor Series. Normally, what we do, guys, here is we say, what was our match of the night? I'm guessing we're all on the same page on this one. So why don't we take a few moments. Nate, share your thoughts on the Gargano and Ciampa defeating the Revival best out of three match to win the NXT tag titles.
Yeah, with all due respects to Mickey and Asuka, which I dug, and also Joe Nakamura, obviously, this was the clear-cut favorite for me. And I think overall the event, it was kind of down for me. But this was certainly the highlight. I think it was the right call. I've been surprised by how much I've been into the Revival, because at first I was very cold on them. But I guess I don't know if it's me just appreciating them more or them improving, but I'm really into them now. So I think they can move on to bigger and better things. Because Lord knows we need tag teams, particularly on Raw. But yeah, I thought it was a fantastic match and might have been the best match of the weekend, Survivor Series included.
I think it was easily the best match of the weekend. I mean, there's some that think it was the best match in the last, whatever, 5 years. I mean, well, I don't know if you're a rating guy, Nate. I don't think you really are, per se, but was it 5 stars in your mind, or where would you have it?
It's pretty damn close. Yeah. I don't know if I'd go five all the way, but it's certainly like at least a 4.5. So we're splitting hairs at that point.
How about you, Steve?
In terms of rating, it definitely was match of the weekend, and it's intriguing that you can argue that with the last big two pay-per-views, Gargano Ciampa Revival was both the top two matches. Mm-hmm. I was leaning more towards AJ Cena.
Yeah, I think AJ Cena was better at SummerSlam.
But there are people who would argue that was it. What I loved about the match was I like when there's a series of matches and they do callbacks. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, each team has learned from what they've done before when they've faced each other. And this match, and there was one point in particular that took it a second level. Like, I think it was Dash snuck under the ring to pull Ciampa down, as he did at SummerSlam. So Gargano couldn't make the tag, and Ciampa was onto him and kicked him down. So you think that Gargano's going to make the hot tag, but then Dash recovered and knocked him over again. So like it tricked me into thinking, oh, here comes the hot tag. You know, Ciampa was onto him, and they tricked me a second time. And it just shows how crafty the Revival are, because they thought that Ciampa might do that, so they had a second plan in mind. And that was just kind of, for me, like kind of the microcosm of the match itself. It was a lot of fun. I thought there was no way that they were going to be able to, even with the stipulation of 2 out of 3 falls, that they were going to be able to match their SummerSlam match. And I think they surpassed it.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. I mean, and the four guys are so good at the little details. Like, they just work the little things so well. And the selling from Ciampa and mainly Gargano was fantastic. The Revival just, I mean, they've clearly taken a step up over the last few months, Nate, to the point where I'd argue they're probably the best tag team in the company. And I'll be curious to see how they're utilized on the main roster. You would think they'd go to SmackDown, natural feud with American Alpha. We'll see. But 22 minutes that just flew by.
Honestly, if for real quick though, JR, you know, the thing that I hate the most right now is what the hell they got going on with the club and the New Day.
Right.
Because it feels so much like a rehash. Imagine if the Revival were in the role of the club. Like, right. That would be so much better.
Well, and I kind of like, there was an idea our buddy Peter threw out in the live chat that we got going on, saying that what if Raw kind of becomes like the super team tag division, and you shuttle the legit teams all to SmackDown. So SmackDown has like the pure tag division with the undercard guys that are all working as united teams, and Raw, the tag belts are almost like main event level. So you have super teams put together to battle over the tag titles, Sheamus and Cesaro, Owens and Jericho, you know, like guys like that, and that your tag titles are almost like main event level on Raw. Where SmackDown, you really stack the division on SmackDown by loading it with all the really good tag teams. I kind of like that to make the divisions feel different instead of both watered down.
So we can see like a Revival versus a Fresh Face Vaudevillains on main event.
Right, load it up, load it up. Anyway, I like that idea, but I do think Revival is easily state their claim on the top of the division across the company. And the match itself, I thought was fantastic. It was a really fast 22 minutes, like I said. I like the finish too, where the Revival hung on as long as they could and they just looked at each other and finally, okay, we're done. Like, we can't get out of this one. I thought it was really well booked. I thought from the minute they started this story with Ciampa and Gargano, when they showed up in Regal's office all those months ago, and forced their way into, was that last year's Dusty tournament? When did they show up? And remember, Regal gave them the chance and they hung around, and
they had a couple, small matches before the Dusty tournament.
Right.
And then were put in. So it's only been about a year.
Okay. But it was a well-booked year for them because they worked their way up, and then they finally did it themselves.
And they weren't around the whole time. You know, they just...
Right. They came
just away. Signed full-time recently.
Right. So it was a great match. What did you guys think of Joe beating Nakamura, Steve?
I was shocked. That I didn't see until last night. I watched that after Raw, and I was surprised. I was shocked. I didn't think that was going to happen. Thought that maybe that, you know, Joe might be moved up, I realized that it was going to happen when he, you know, did the SG Joe on the stairs, and like, oh my God, they're going to go through with this. And I thought that they made Joe look a lot better than they have for, gosh, maybe since he first came in, because they showed him again as a monster who didn't care. I thought they did a great job at the beginning of the introductions when they just focus on his face. Like, his face took up the whole screen and it just kind of lingered for about 30 seconds just staring at you. It's kind of like they did with Nia Jax with her eyes when she first made her appearances. And he just, you know, kind of looked like a sadist towards the end, just killing Nakamura to get back what he thought was his. And it will be intriguing to see what they do from here on out. Is Nakamura, will he be a guy that appears at the Rumble? Will he, you know, it was kind of rumored when he came in that he wasn't going to be down in NXT that much, but they've said that about a lot of guys.
This one's interesting because this entire feud, my big thought is, while this is cool and I really dig it, both guys have outgrown NXT, in my opinion. But that being said, it was a great match. I was surprised. I don't know if I'd go as far as shocked, but I was definitely surprised. So I think Rude and Nakamura is the way that I would go. But again, if Nakamura is to come up early next year, how much investment do we put in that now? Or where does Joe go from here? So it left me with more questions than answers, which I think might actually be a good thing, because I don't know how you guys have felt about NXT over the last few months, but I'm not going to go as far as to say it's been stale, but I haven't been as energized with the product as I have been in the past.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a fair statement. I don't think you're alone in that. And yeah, I don't know where else they go from here. I mean, you could think they do Nakamura Joe one more time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they're running into some trouble, I think, with what you're saying, Nate, is that they've done so many repeat matches on their takeover shows. We had talked before about how three out of the five matches on the main show were rematches from the last show. I actually thought going in that Joe and Nakamura, because I haven't been watching the weekly programming, and I thought that Joe Nakamura had some sort of stipulation added to it after Brooklyn, and nope, it was just a similar match. It was just a regular old match.
I feel like maybe they should just do it on like the TV or something, you know what I mean, and not do it on another takeover. If there is a takeover before the Rumble, I can't remember if they finalized it or not, but you know, I don't know if you want to run that again there. Let's see, when's the next one? As of right now, the next one's scheduled for Mania, but we'll see if they squeeze one in at the Rumble.
And I really hope they keep Joe and Rude away from each other, because right. That is a match that, while it would be good, obviously, both are professionals, I don't think you want to invoke the TNA stigma unless you have to. And the match for me, if you're going to do a TNA match, it's got to be Joe and AJ.
Right. Yeah. Option there, too. Any other thoughts on this card takeover? What did you guys think of how Mickie James looked? I thought she looked great. Do you think she has a little run here, or do you think that was kind of her swan song?
Wait, you're talking looks, aren't you? Or are you talking in-ring? Or both?
Looks, we know she delivered, and we know is not her swan song. In-ring, what do you think?
I was impressed. When the match started, I thought that it was a little bit slower for an Asuka match. She's usually go, go, go. And I thought, oh, maybe she's like slowing it down for Mickey and they kind of feel each other out. But, you know, Mickey kept up and she did a great job. And I hope that she's around more. I think there's a good spot for her in NXT, working with a lot of the, you know, maybe making some of these, man, I can't think of a good word for this, but like the women who don't really have a name yet, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. your Peyton Royces and your,
And I think that's where she belongs, Mickey, is NXT. Like, I don't think she should be brought up to the main roster. Like, there's so much more value in her in an NXT, which is why I always am confused when people seem frustrated or confused why, like, Samoa Joe is still left down there. Like, yeah, he'd be great on the main roster, but I feel like him being the steady veteran on top of NXT, like, that's a big help for that brand. Like, it's a name. It's a veteran guy that can work with the young guys. Like, there's so much value in him being in NXT, and I think Mickey could be the female version. Of yeah. just the steadying force that just stays down there.
And she's been active. You know, mm-hmm. It's not like she's not done anything over the last few years. And you know, as you're saying with Joe, he's also been – he has a history of being a trainer for wrestlers. Right. So, you know, why wouldn't you want him in with some of the younger guys or people making like Nakamura, who is a veteran, but you want to have to switch up styles.
Right.
Well, see, my big issue with somebody like Joe is I get what you're saying, and I agree mm-hmm. to a certain extent, but if there's money still on the table, I think you got to make the money, which is where I think Joe is at a little bit different level than Mickey. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Mickey James is going to sell pay-per-views. I don't think Mickey James is going to sell house shows. Whereas Samoa Joe, if you put him or Nakamura on that card, you're going to get some butts in the seats.
Well, Nakamura for sure. I think because he's newer to this generation. Yeah. Like, Joe's been around in America, you know. Like, Nakamura really hasn't until now as far as for the mainstream fan. I just think there's a difference between the two. Nakamura, to me, is more of a star potential than Joe. And I'm a Joe fan. I just think he's worth more to them there as a name draw for NXT at this point.
Yeah, I can see that. I like Mickey, though. I think, you know, for a woman that has been pushed on a train track, she recovered remarkably well. I think this is a great spot for her, you know, and I think when Steve is talking about some of the younger girls, you know, like an Ember Moon or like a Nikki Cross, who I'm pretty high on, I think that she can be good for them. In terms of Asuka, I think I need to see more character work, if that makes any sense. Like, obviously, I'm a big Asuka fan, but I think she works well with people that are expressive and can kind of carry the storytelling part of the load, whereas she can carry the technical part. Like, I think a match that I would love to see, it probably won't happen, but I would completely be there for it, would be Asuka and Victoria. Because I think Victoria can tell a good story. She's competent enough in the ring, but she's also a good actor, which I think a lot of the girls in NXT are still learning how to be.
All right, why don't we move on to Survivor Series? We're not going to go through the whole card, but leaving the main event out, Nate, what was your match of the night on Sunday?
It had to be the co-main then.
Yeah.
Because everything else just wasn't there for me. And a lot of it was not so much with the in-ring work, because like you said, these guys and girls nowadays can fall out of bed and have a 3-star match. Mm-hmm. But there was very little in the way of storytelling. There was very little, particularly in these Survivor Series matches, there was very little in the way of stakes. Like, what in the hell were these people fighting for, other than the fact that their general managers and their commissioners signed them up for this?
And speaking of the stakes, what happened to the stipulation? Like, that just went away, right? They never mentioned it, that the three guys going.
That. Yep. And the whole thing with Stephanie, when she was threatening people's jobs, they hand-waved that the next night. Oh, I was just playing. I wanted to motivate them. So, like, what the hell was all this for?
Right. And weird. And the three people swap thing was the weirdest one, because that just went away. Like, that is never mentioned it once. At least they played up still the Cruiserweight division and the IC title, neither of which left. So everything stayed put. The Cruiserweight finish was a disaster with Baron Corbin coming in and ending that on a DQ. Like, why not just have that? Because I thought once Kalisto won by DQ, they were going to pull the okie doke and still move the division and just keep the title on Brian Kendrick. And then they don't even do that. It's like, why even bother then? Just have Kalisto lose. Like, you know, like, who cares? I thought the 5-on-5 co-main was, I mean, it went 52 minutes. So, I mean, there was good in it. I didn't think there was the cohesion between the big moments wasn't really there. It was kind of big thing, then nothing, then big thing, then nothing. And then it went way off the tracks late when everything broke down at the end. I liked, like, you know, the Ellsworth costing Braun, like, I thought that was well done, and then getting destroyed a minute later.
That was great, yeah.
That was really good. And then, you know, the Shane stuff was super scary, obviously. He clearly knocked out legitimately, because you could tell just by the way he landed and just curled up with one shoulder and wasn't moving. I thought that killed Reigns for the rest of the match, because he completely seemed preoccupied with what had happened. I liked the finish a lot. I thought Orton and Bray was a nice surprise. I kind of like Orton with the Wyatts. It's been kind of cool. I think it's actually helped make Bray, like, cool again and believable again. And he's not the goof that he had been, or kind of the loser that he had been. I think it's helped elevate him. And now he's had a couple of big, you know, moments lately. It was just a cool finish, I thought. I liked it a lot. So there was stuff to like, but as a whole, I thought it disappointed for a match with that much talent that went 52 minutes. You know, should have been more than like 3 stars, which is probably around where I'd have it, just thanks to some big spots. What did you think, Steve?
I thought the first 15 minutes or so, and I'm guesstimating on the time, because I thought it was on its way to being an all-time classic. Mm-hmm. The 5-on-5 stuff was extraordinary, where they all, you know, all of a sudden a few minutes in the match, they just all face off and go at each other, and there's just a lot of storylines happening at once, and the crowd was super into it. And besides that, it was just it just got ugly really quick. Shane McMahon should not be in a ring anymore. Between WrestleMania and this, I think he's done. You know, it wasn't just the spear too. Like, there was moments with Jericho when he couldn't, like, figure out how to do a roll up and had an audibly call a small package to Jericho. It's just not there. They could have put anybody else in the match, and it would have been a little bit better. So, like, he made Roman look bad. He made Jericho look bad. Mm-hmm. His punches were just terrible. It didn't even look like they came close to – it looked like he was shadowboxing.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, they should have left Corbin in the match. There was no need to have him in there. Yeah, and then the Reigns thing was a disaster too. I mean, he could have hit the spot. He could have hit the elbow on Braun without being in the match. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I know, like, one thing Chad was on about, which I agree, was just like the lack of continuity with DQs and what's not a DQ. Right. People are interfering all over the place. Sometimes it counts, sometimes it doesn't.
The ref just looked confused half the match.
Right.
He was like, they needed to get someone with a little bit more experience to be in a match like that, because I don't think he knew what to be doing at times. Even Rollins towards the end of the match was kind of I don't think he was selling. I think he was completely bloated. Like, right. Not bloated, but like out of air and just blown up.
Yeah, it was a weird match. It really was. And, you know, 52 minutes, I know what they were going for with this epic. But then you look at the other match times, it's like they could have filled so much better. Like, the women's match goes 17 minutes. The IC, Miz and Zayn only went 14. The tag with 20 guys went 19. And then Kendrick Kalisto, 12. So you could have helped out that main event a little bit by even at least the tag match going 25, 30. You know, that easily had another 12 minutes in it, that thing. What did you guys make a New Day quick elimination? I thought they did it to kind of protect them, take them out quick without paying attention instead of having them be eliminated organically. I can't think of another reason, so I'm sticking with that. What did you think, Nate?
I didn't mind it for the reasons that you stated, but also going back to maybe the theme of the night, what are we fighting for?
Right.
And New Day really didn't have anything to gain or lose from this match. And so it didn't bother me. I think my issue with all of these matches, and I might have touched on it on the last time we did Clotheslines and Headlines, was the fact that every match was pretty much built the same way. Mm-hmm. With all these people that couldn't get along, being forced to get along. And I would have liked more cohesion from these teams because it didn't feel like, you know, it felt very convenient and necessary for the plot that everybody had to be on the same side. But, and I keep going back to it, the Survivor Series match in 2014 with Team Cena versus The Authority.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that match made you feel something. And I'm not a big John Cena fan or a big Dolph Ziggler fan, but there were stakes and you felt that each guy was there for a reason. Whereas with this, it's like, hey, we got to fill these spots, man.
Right.
So yeah, that's my long roundabout way of saying I didn't mind the New Day getting eliminated early.
Do you, Steve, any feelings on that?
No. They have to have some sort of intrigue that someone could possibly beat them because they've pretty much beaten everyone at this point. So, you know, maybe getting some of that back. Maybe someone from SmackDown jumps over. Who knows what they're going to do at this point with the Raw and SmackDown separation. But, yeah, and I also think you're right about the crowd, too. They're worried about that the crowd's going to turn on the match right away if the best team in their minds is out.
So we've got the big four behind us now for the year. And overall, did any of them – you know, what level do they deliver? They've built these festivals up. They've built these, you know, put a lot of hype. They've made them 4 hours. They have the, well, 7 hours of your Mania. You have the, you know, biggest matches, your biggest stars, celebrities, and everything else. NXT before it. You know, how would you rank them, I guess? Did anything deliver in your mind? Were the off-month shows better, top to bottom? I know we got a couple more to go, but I mean, a quick thought, I'd say SummerSlam was obviously the best of the four. I guess, I don't know, is this the worst? Rumble the worst? Mania the worst? It's tough for me. I was at Mania, so it's hard for me to gauge it. But what do you think, Steve? What's your assessment of the big four this year?
I'm trying to take the bias of being there live out of it, but I feel that SummerSlam was the best. You know, you have AJ, Cena. The main event was quite the spectacle. Feel like there's like you were mentioning before how it's hard to remember back like what happened in February. I don't know if it's just getting old, but you made me feel a little bit better that maybe it's just not me that I can't remember. I can't remember Royal Rumble. I remember the big match, but I have no idea what else was on that.
Right.
But I would say SummerSlam overall. I think this one I was really excited about because I like long multi-man matches. I have no problem with a 10-man match going 52 minutes. I think that they could have done a lot more with it. So I was really excited about the opportunity to have three of those type matches. And it just didn't deliver for me as much as I was hoping for. Not that I thought that like the 10 women match was going to be like a 5-star classic or, you know, with 20 guys in the ring, it's going to get crazy for a tag match. But, you know, we've seen that some the Survivor Series and the tag team matches back in the 80s were amazing. The amazing crowd heat that they kept going the whole time. So it can be done. And it just didn't deliver as much as I wanted it to.
The Rumble had Ambrose and Owens and The Last Man Standing. New Day versus The Usos. Kalisto versus Del Rio. Charlotte versus Becky Lynch. And then the Rumble. So that's, I don't remember much about it besides AJ Styles.
I remember the Rumble. The Rumble was great.
What do you think, Nate? How did these four shake out?
Well, to your point about trying to remember, like, I had to Google what happened at the Royal Rumble. But yeah, like, I think if I'm looking at each of the big four and taking away the snapshot for WrestleMania, the show was too damn long and we had an impromptu Rock match. For the Royal Rumble, I had to look it up. For SummerSlam, we had a great match with Cena and Styles, and then we had whatever the hell Lesnar Orton was. And for Survivor Series, the return of traditional matches and Goldberg. So it's been a down year in terms of the big four as complete shows, but in terms of moments, and that's what you were talking about earlier, JR, the moments that are created.
You nailed it. That's what they want.
Look at big moments.
Look what we keep mentioning of these big four shows, right? The big, if you think of the off month show, the other month shows, what do we remember? More matches, right? From those, but yep. These big four, we all just sat here and named the moments of each of them, you know? Cena, AJ was like the one match we named. Everything else is a moment. Orton almost dying, you know, Goldberg, Brock, AJ's debut, Triple H winning the Rumble, The Rock at WrestleMania. You know, like everything was moment, 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 match. So it's, yeah, I think it shows exactly what we were saying earlier.
And as long as they're selling out or getting close to selling out all of these dates in the same cities, this isn't going to go away. They're seeing it as a success. The fact that they've expanded it to all big four events, these making it a huge weekend, mm-hmm. means they're happy with how it's going. And until they start, you know, losing ticket sales or losing network subscriptions, they're going to keep going with this type of build in this type of like supercard with, like you said, the moments.
And the thing is, they have so much fat they can trim that even with mm-hmm. numbers being down here and there and profit, I mean, profits are fine, but if they do sink, there's so much they can cut back on and trim here and there to make sure they still remain profitable that I don't see any change. And I think USA is fine with the ratings. Now, will WWE get as much money as they have in the past? I don't know. But the TV landscape is changing so severely that, you know, a 1.9 15 years ago was a fucking disaster, and now it's like, whatever. It's like still one of the top shows on TV, you know?
And the way that the network has changed the business model can't be understated because, you know, on Sunday night, I had so many people hit me up and complaining, and I was like, I don't know what you're complaining for. You know, you've already got the network or you know, you've already bought this on pay-per-view, but the majority of the people that were complaining were network subscribers. And it brings me back to that gif that just makes me laugh every time I see it, where they've got the shucking and jiving R-Truth that they used to have at the end of the network shows. And it's like, fuck it, we already got your money. and it's like, yeah, they got your money, so they don't care. They're not in the business of creating these big wrestling shows anymore. They're in the moment of creating moments, like we said. And what can we show on ESPN, or what can we have that somebody talks about on TMZ, or what can we have that we could put on Twitter in a little 90-second clip? Hey, this match is perfect for Twitter. So I think that's the current mind frame of the WWE. Now, eventually, I mean, every now and then they'll throw us a bone, like Styles Cena or like NXT and things of that nature. But I think this is where we are. And you're not going to get those classics anymore. But the good thing is, or the bad thing, depending on how you look at it, is, yeah, Survivor Series wasn't this great wrestling show, but it's all right because we've got another show in 2 weeks and another show 2 weeks after that. And I don't know how many hundreds of hours of content on the network. So if you're a fan of the WWE or even a fan of wrestling, because they've got so much of the history of the sport on their network, there's something for you. Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the network, is littered with Undertaker matches, guys. So why don't we just take a moment? We kind of hinted at it before, but there seems to be a few options on the table for who could fight Undertaker and what the permeation for the top few matches of Mania. And we'll probably do this a few times, obviously, between now and April. But it's kind of top of mind right now because there's some rumors out there, and this is like the unofficial kickoff to the preseason of WrestleMania season that officially begins at the Rumble. It always, Survivor Series kind of lights the powder keg a little bit. The rumors out there obviously are, you know, Undertaker versus John Cena, the match that will forever be rumored that still has not happened at WrestleMania. Undertaker versus AJ Styles is floating around out there. Undertaker versus Shane McMahon obviously was rumored heavily before Shane almost died at Survivor Series. And then if you look at how everything else shakes out, Cena, AJ, been rumored for their big blow off where Cena finally ends AJ's title reign and maybe they have like an Iron Man or something. And then you got Brock and Goldberg, or Brock and Shane. And that's what I meant when I said Taker Shane. I meant Brock and Shane. Brock and Goldberg. Where does Reigns fall in all this? I think Reigns Undertaker was a match I thought they should have maybe done last year that they could do this year if they wanted to do the Reigns heel. Just like, how do you see these big, as of right now, if you had to guess kind of these top three matches to sell Mania, what would you peg it at, Steve?
I can see Undertaker's on SmackDown, so I can see Undertaker Cena as one, Undertaker AJ as two, and then Undertaker Reigns as three. For me personally, I would want to see AJ versus Undertaker the most out of those three, because I think that AJ has been getting, you know, classics out of everybody he goes against, and I think that the combination with him and Undertaker can be a classic as well.
And I feel like that might be the least likely because it leaves Cena out of his two most likely matches.
Right.
It leaves Cena Taker off, and it leaves out Cena AJ. Now, you could do Cena Reigns, which is another match they should probably do at some point that they haven't. I feel like AJ Taker rumors are the red herring, and I feel like Cena AJ makes so much sense for them. Because Cena hasn't really beaten them yet, and they got to have that match, and Cena's got to win at some point. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I think Cena Styles makes the most sense, but I'm going to go with Steve on this one in terms of what I'd like to see out of those options. It would probably be Taker versus AJ because, A, you know, we talked earlier about wins and losses not meaning anything. I think a win over Taker at WrestleMania, even though it doesn't mean what it once did, it still means something. And so I'd love to see AJ kind of get that feather in his cap, you know, beating Taker and beating Cena. And like this is really bolstering this guy's claim to being the face that runs the place. But it also ties into AJ's relationship with Sting, which I would love to see. And, you know, just have Sting pop up and give some heartfelt comments to both guys and then just kind of disappear again. But that's just me wishing to see Sting and Taker at least acknowledge each other just one time. Just like, what's going on, man? Hey, what's going on with you? All right, I'm cool. And then just leave. Just like that. I want that moment. And for anybody that's seen Luke Cage on Netflix, I want the moment where Luke Cage goes into the store and sees Method Man. And Luke Cage is like, hey, it's you. And Method Man's like, no, brother, it's you. I want that with Taker and Sting.
And then Sting gives away Nia Jax to your hand in marriage, Nate. Does that work?
I mean, that's long-term booking.
So, I mean, it feels like the top matches will be comprised of some mix of Undertaker, Brock Lesnar, Goldberg, John Cena, AJ Styles, and probably Reigns, right? I mean, that seems to be the six. So do we get a slow burn of Owens Jericho all the way to Mania? Does Owens keep the title and face him there? I mean, I feel like no. I feel like Owens loses either to Jericho or because of Jericho, and then they just fight at Mania on some level.
It feels like Royal Rumble would be a prime time for something like that to happen.
Yeah. I'm going with what I said before. I want it. I want Jericho winning the title and then Brock destroying him so he can force his way to a match at Goldberg. There's your angle that I'm going to be upset it doesn't happen. All right. Any other final thoughts on WWE for this week before we wrap things up?
As of right now, they have made no mention of people jumping to Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah, I think
so
that's gone.
That's out the door.
That's not a thing.
So what was the point?
It wasn't on Steve. So, of course, the next pay-per-view is TLC. That is a SmackDown show. When the main event of that was booked a while ago, and that's Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles for the title. So that'll be interesting to see what else they fill that out in the next Raw show, Roadblock, a couple weeks after that. So we'll be talking more about that in our next episode. So why don't we take a break? When we come back, Brad Woodling, the boss, will be in the house. We're going to talk some Ring of Honor. We'll look at Final Battle coming up. And we'll kind of talk about where ROH stands toward the end of the year. And then later on, we'll be talking some Thanksgiving, what we're thankful for, and kind of plans and memories and whatnot. So, all right, we'll be right back after this break. Take a listen to everything going on at the Placemation Wrestling and Pop Feed. When it's all right and it's coming on, we- Spinations, JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySpination.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the PlaySpination Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaySimation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaySimation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaySimation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back, Clotheslines and Headlines. You are locked into episode 12. Steve Willey here, freshly recovered off my knee surgery. I got a nice steel plate in there. I'm gonna do my 2016 Lex Luger impersonation across the towns across the country. Here with Nate Milton, of course. JT Rizzero, he's somewhere around. I think he's here. And joining us right now, my good friend, my Ring of Honor. I call him an expert, Brad Willing. How are you doing, Brad?
Steve, I'm doing great. I'm real excited to talk some Final Battle.
Big Papa!
It's great to be here.
You know, we thought about Kevin Kelly, but we wanted the true expert. You know, I got to butter you up a little bit. The true Ring of Honor expert, Kevin
Kevin's a pretty straight shooter. I mean, that was a good preview the last time he was on. They've had a really, you know, he seems to be doing well. They had quite a busy couple months, you know, which he described on the show with, you know, they just got back from England. I saw him tweet earlier today that they were doing the intro video for the pay-per-view. So they were like up late last night producing that with Adam Cole there to kind of set like that, you know, the bumper in front of the show to set up the main event. So yeah, they should get a break soon, but it's been a busy time for them.
I'm still reeling over that interview because he said I have an NPR voice, and I didn't know, knowing him, that if that was a compliment or an insult. So I've been bringing that in my head a little bit for the last couple months. I was like, you know, we got to get Brad on here. So Brad, yes. Coming up next week, I got to pop my peas when you're on. Coming up in a week or so, 12/2, December 2nd, Friday, from the Hammerstein Ballroom, back in the Hammerstein Ballroom instead of that Terminal 5 disaster place. Final Battle, Ring of Honor, the big N. It's the WrestleMania, I think, of the year, where you usually wrap up a bunch of storylines, and we can talk about that as we go down the card. I know I already tipped my hand about what I think about the switch back to Hammerstein Ballroom, but are you pleased with the change?
Yeah, I think it was great. And they were – look, I mean, there's always a cost to things, and Hammerstein, the rents – you know, a lot, but they were smart to kind of listen, because I think after, you know, even the last shows around the War of the Worlds tour that was there, is people were just kind of about it. You know, there's some visibility issues in there. You can't see it as many people. So they kind of gambled ahead. You know, they don't do a lot of pay-per-views. We're not really sure how much money they even make off those. And of course the cost that's associated with them. So it was kind of cool to be able to see them, you know, announce pretty far in advance that we're going to do Hammerstein. And for the most part, you know, I'm not going to say on here it's sold out, but I'm pretty certain it is almost sold out, if not already. So.
Yeah, and I feel like they have to be doing somewhat good with the pay-per-views because they've done more the second half of the year than they did in the first half in the year before. So obviously they're making some money about over them because why would you multiply negative over several months? But, you know, who knows? TNA made a career of it.
I'm just going to say hashtag ask Dixie.
Well, you know, I'm going to say that Sinclair is a lot more, you know, keeping their eye on the bottom line. So they, I don't think they would do anything if it wasn't profitable for them. So they eke something out there. And I know that, you know, and we should call this out, you know, now that, you know, they're going to run a pay-per-view, you can set your Twitter and Google alerts to people complaining about the price, even though it's on TV as a traditional pay-per-view. And they'll compare it to Evolve and the Flow Slam subscription and how it's, and I will say, I mean, I personally, myself, I order them online through their website with the Ringside member discount. So it only comes out to like, I don't know, $26 or whatever. And I totally get, you know, $50 through, you know, your local cable provider. It feels like a lot because it's been a long time since 2014 and the WWE Network came along to kind of, you know, change that model. But that is one of my, you know, a regular occurrence with them as the pay-per-view comes around.
Right. It's the standard anti-Ring of Honor talk that, you know, some people feel that they need to do. I'm purchasing it. I have on Dish Network. I think it's $34.99 or $39.99.
Nice.
It's nice, and that's the thing I think people forget is that on some of the cable deals, $10 is an upcharge from them, not from Sinclair, not from Ring of Honor.
Sure.
So you have to, if you're gonna rag on the price, you have to point fingers in the right direction. So the card wise, we just had with the latest episode that was on TV last week and will be up on the website on Wednesday the 23rd. We pretty much have a complete card set. First match that is listed, I'm going from reverse order here on the website. We have Colt Cabana versus Dalton Castle, which is a grudge match, which I messaged you about today. I'm like, wait, when did this happen?
What's the grudge?
They were just best friends a couple weeks ago. And yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, and I'm gonna tie this into another show on our network, the This Week in Wrestling with Pete and Timothy. They have an Indies and International kind of subset that they do, and they cover Ring of Honor TV. So, and they talked about kind of, you know, why you team people together if the whole point is to have them feud. And I think that's a pretty astute point. Although I do think these guys are a really good tag team, and I think they could have done a little bit more with it. But essentially, the story is that on the Glory by Honor, the Champs versus All-Stars match turned into a no contest and then turned into a tag team. They cashed in their the tag team title shot they had that they won at the last pay-per-view. And Dalton Castle had done this with and Cabana just wanted to be a champion. And Dalton did it like in the heat of the moment, and they lost, so they lost their chance. So that's what set up the turn. A little quirky on TV. I actually think that Castle did a pretty good job of kind of selling it. You don't see too many like traditional, like, oh, he turned heel on him, like with the Ring of Honor like this. But they did it on this past TV. So you'll see, you know, Cole turns on him then. But, you know, there's some logic behind it at least. And, you know, one of the points that they talked about on This Week in Wrestling that I'd like to get your idea with too is they questioned, you know, could Cabana be booed? And my counter to that was that if there's one person that he could be booed against, it would be Dalton Castle. And he did even get booed in Baltimore for the TV. I mean, you know, you got a couple people, you know, clapping for no good reason. But, you know, Dalton's a pretty hot, you know, he's a hot character there. And you're going to turn on him and the boys, the crowd's going to get behind you. So, yeah, so Colt's going to go into this one as a heel.
And it was a particularly – what I did like about – the moment itself was a pretty brutal turn. It was, you know, I was kind of waiting for it because I knew it was going to happen, but it was a little bit more violent than I expected and kind of brought back memories of the Cabana you saw maybe against Homicide years ago.
You know, low blows still get over, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you could throw a worked punch or whatever, but you know, you go in for a hug and you knee a guy pretty hard in the groin. I mean, that gets over still. So, you know, it was pretty good.
All right. And yeah, so a little bit of a surprise turn, seeing that that slow burn took about like 5 weeks, I think, because it was October that Glory by Honor happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, it's interesting too, is that, and Steve, is that Caban is, this will be his 20th match this year for Ring of Honor. Kind of a little under the radar, but he has been since he came in May. He's been, I would say, pretty regular.
Right. With the exception of his trip out to Scotland that he does every year for the comedy festival. Yeah, he's been, especially on the house shows, he's been a mainstay.
Yeah.
Next match, Jushin Thunder Liger making his return appearance. Always fun to see Liger in Ring of Honor because, especially the last couple years, he's been in some really good matches. He's been in some really good matches on the shows, more like mat-based, a little bit of comedy thrown in, put some guys over. I mean, made Cheeseburger a star.
Sure.
And now, even though he wasn't in the building, Silas Young started the feud by kind of taking shots at Liger by via the fan, Ultra Liger, who's in the crowd at all the Baltimore tapings in the front row, kind of browbeating him while he was in a conversation with Kevin Kelly. And so here we go, like Silas Young, another kind of big time match for him. He's had a few this year. He has had a match with Cole, match with Lethal, getting a little bit more name now that some other guys have moved on to other areas. What do you think about this match, Brad?
Yeah, I think this is going to be – I thought that Silas Young was really good against Shibata, like exceeded expectations there. And then, you know, I honestly felt bad for him because it seemed like the Cole match – I haven't seen the match yet, but – They showed some highlights on TV kind of leading into this past thing. And, man, the crowd, which was sparse as it was, seemed absolutely dead to, like, anything they were doing. Probably, you know, not expecting him to win, you know, so they just weren't heated for it. And I felt, like, bad for him because, you know, they were working their butts off. You know, I definitely think you're going to see – I wouldn't say Silas is stop and start – pushes. He's pretty regularly on TV and something, but I do think that he wins here. And then, you know, who knows in the new year. But I do think that, and he's a guy that sometimes, you know, he wasn't on the last pay-per-view, you know, but just cut a promo to kind of go over his Rumble and stuff. So it's kind of been, they kind of got to find something for him to do or be something in the regular. But I do agree with you, Steve. You know, you've seen the Lethal match on TV, the O'Reilly matches. I thought it was one of the better O'Reilly matches on TV this year, actually, especially since he's bulked up. So yeah, you're starting to see more high profile names as they kind of slowly move him up that tier.
And on the house shows, they have him. I mean, he won Tag Wars with Beer City Bruiser. He's been doing these title matches. Man, we should have a discussion at some point about independent cards in Florida and their inability to draw, and maybe NXT crowds have burn them quite a bit, but that seems to be around the horn for multiple organizations, a problem state. Moving on, Cody Rhodes making his – and I've got a question for Nate on this too. How can he be Cody and Brandi Rhodes in TNA? But he is being on TV. He's on the website. He has stated that he is Cody Rhodes, and he's going against Jay Lethal. You know, kind of a special attraction match. You know, Lethal not winning in Europe, getting his title back from Adam Cole, and just putting him in a spotlight match. Cody wants to go to several organizations and be in some name matches, and here's another one.
I don't know how they get around the name thing, and I like the matchup. I think it's a good little showcase for both guys, but. In terms of the legality of the Cody Rhodes thing, I don't know, man. I don't know how you would get around that. I'm trying to think. Maybe instead of showing up with Brandi Rhodes, he shows up with former Chicago Cub Carl Tuffy Rhodes.
Oh, that is
– that's how they get away with it.
Changes it to R-H-O-A-D-E-S.
And two homers in his first game, I believe.
And nothing since.
Yeah.
Although he was big in Japan for a while.
And there was also a baseball player named Dusty Rhodes. You could say he's his grandson or whatever, great grandson.
I would like to think that Sinclair has, you know, Nate, I don't want to throw shade at TNA. I'm going to go out on the limb and say Sinclair is slightly more organized when it comes to intellectual property and copyrights and trademarks. So they probably have their ducks in a row here. They had a little bit more time.
You know, you would think so. But then you got Kevin Kelly running rampant on these PTB Christmas episodes, and he's the voice of the company. So you never know. Maybe they're not as buttoned up as you think, Brad.
Yeah, when they hear that this year, maybe there'll be some changes.
This might be it.
This will probably be it. But Steve, to the match, and really with Cody first, quite a year for him. I know he's done with TNA. He really only signed to do Bound for Glory, and I guess the TV taping after, so he was on like a couple episodes. And as has been, you know, in the Observer and also disclosed to us from our friend, you know, he's got double digit dates with Ring of Honor lined up through the first quarter. So, you know, this is just the beginning for him, not a one off. Which leads the result a little bit in doubt for me. I'm guessing he's gonna go over Lethal, but I don't know. It's kind of interesting on paper how they react to him too. But I know that we'll be seeing Cody, and Cody actually hinted both on Twitter to Steve Corino about highlighting his hair. And then on this past TV, they talked about Kevin Sullivan would be interested that Cody Rhodes was coming in, which is a callback to, you know, Whitmer and that whole storyline and Florida storylines from the 80s and his dad. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going to be going on there. Maybe they're going to bring him into that that Whitmer mess. But it's an interesting one. The one I really honestly have a hard time predicting what it's going to be right now. But I'm going to go with Cody.
Okay. And next up, we got four title matches. That is something we have not heard in a Ring of Honor ring for probably since the women back in the day. Six-man tag team championship match. This could be really interesting. He's got Leo Rush, who replaced ACH, Jay White, and my favorite, Kushida, against The Kingdom, the new version of The Kingdom with Matt Taven, TK O'Ryan, and you're going to have to help me here, Vinny Marcella?
Yeah, let's go with that.
Sure. Yep.
Marcellia.
He's a Rhode Island guy.
Fun fact, he wrestled against Lethal for the title in the show that Justin and the PTB boys went to.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Much so, shorter hair now. Looks considerably different. I guess, first of all, what do you think of Leo Rush replacing ACH? And second, what do you think of this new Kingdom? Like, do you think it lived up to the hype? Taven's been hyping this for a better part of a year.
Yeah, so first, it's funny. So Leo Rush replaced ACH, and it was Kushida who replaced Leo Rush. Mm-hmm. Originally, when Leo then took his European 30-day excursion with the Beer City Bruiser. So he came back, and now that ACH is done with the company, and it had originally been reported that he was going to work through some dates, and that obviously is not correct. So they've re-replaced him. And so, I mean, Rush is a good fill-in here. That team is just kind of all pieced together with those three young, hungry guys, and it's cool that they got something to do on this big show, and they'll be on the card. But I do think that the Kingdom will go over. Maybe that's me leaning to, like, you know, heels having belts is a little bit more interesting than vice versa. I do think you'll see these belts traded around a lot more than other Ring of Honor belts go. But I do think that they've kind of put the, you know, Taven seemingly sticking around. You know, they supported him through the injury. He was on commentary a ton. In regards to their debut, I like Taven probably more than most people do. And I think that he can carry like a group like that. Just based on his persona, even if he's kind of, I don't want to say he's rusty, he's not, but like, you know, he's getting back into it. I thought he looked good in the two matches they've shown on TV so far. TK O'Ryan looked good too. Vinny maybe isn't a guy you naturally see that fits in with that group, but they kind of all have the Northeast thing. And I thought that their match against Team CMLL from the last TV was really good. And so, I think that they're poised to go in. We'll see how the reaction is, but I do think that I do think we'll see them kind of come out on top here.
And at least the addition of Leo Rush, or the substitution back in, as it were, at least gives you there's a little bit more up in the air at the finish of the match. Whereas if ACH was in there, boy, you sure know who was going over.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's a great point. And I think it's good too because, you know, Rush, we've seen, he had, I don't want to say it's a spoiler, but, you know, he was positioned very well in the survival of the fittest, and where he was put over pretty strong. And so that bodes well for his return, right? Because he kind of, you know, went over to Europe in the middle of this, and then, and, uh, I think he's had some good TV matches this year. I think some people overreact and think he should win every time out. And I think that they're doing okay with him considering he is literally a rookie with them and they signed him to a deal. And he's still kind of good through April. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him into the new year also. But yeah, I like him a good bit.
And I do agree that there's going to be some swapping of this belt. The Motor City Machine Guns are even teasing that they're going to get a group together. You know, you have Bullet Club, you have the Kingdom. You know, you have a lot of changing pieces here. They're going to make this an actual division at this point. And you always will have guys coming over from Japan too. And those never six-man belts seem to change almost every other card at this point.
Right. And I will say, I do want to put over, man, Team CMLL, who I think it was a stat actually was on that same podcast I referenced earlier. They kind of combined the ages of everyone in that addiction match against them. It was like 110 years in the business or something. but Team CMLL, so they did their two matches in one taping, one night in Baltimore, and those guys could go, and they would look like they were having a blast. Like, they looked so happy, and Kamitachi was so excited to bump around for these like legends. You know, and they were really good. I mean, they were two main event time matches out there. Didn't bother them at all. They were great.
No, by the end of it, Guerrero had the whole crowd raising the
roof. He was awesome. Like it was, he was awesome, man.
World Tag Team Championship match. It seems like this has happened a ton, but I was looking back and it really hasn't happened that much. Briscoe Brothers versus the Young Bucks. Young Bucks, the champions after a just brutally great ladder war. I understand that that's an oxymoron, but you have to see it to believe it. It kind of harkened back for me to the like an indie version of the Hardys, Edge and Christian. And man, I had like can't think of who the third team is. Oh, the Dudleys. There we go.
Sure.
It just kind of harkened back to an independent version of that match. And I don't know, like we can talk about this in a minute, but who knows how long the Bucks have at this point? You know, are they going to stick around? I feel like they might stick around because they're making a ton of money in Japan and Ring of Honor, and they're probably making more money just selling their 60 different T-shirts they got up on Pro Wrestling Tees. And right. I think that's a legitimate
and
number.
They have, you know, they have young families, and I've read interviews with them before, and you know, their wives are, you know, they're at home doing their thing and helping with the stores and stuff, and they know they would have to uproot that, and that is a big change. You know, and if you're making good money and you can go and do PWG because Ring of Honor, you know, works with them obviously, and you can do your New Japan, I think they're going to stick around. But I do think that this matchup is kind of like a hedge. Like, yep. In case they don't, then obviously the Briscoes would take the belts back and they would just run the belts through them for the beginning part of next year. I'm not really sure. So I guess right now I think that the Bullet Club will retain. I think the Bucks will stick around. I think they will give them a longer reign than something to give the Briscoes. Unless if something like that happens, you know, maybe there's some other news going on. But I do think they're a pretty good bet with no info really to back that up to stick around other than what we talked about.
All right, TV Championship. Man, has this changed a lot since the last show we were on. Originally, it was going to be Bobby Fish versus Dragon Lee. And then Ring of Honor went to England, and in its debut match for the company, Will Ospreay defeated Bobby Fish for the title. And 2 days later, Will's arch rival, Marty Scurll, won the title from him. So now we've made it a four-way. I didn't do anything. I don't have a personal connection to Nigel McGuinness anymore. Actually, you know, I might actually. Who's to say? Dragon Lee, Bobby Fish, Will Ospreay, Marty Scurll. I was a little disappointed. I'm not a fan of these four-corner survival matches anymore. Used to be when they first started because they were unique, and now they seem to do it every single pay-per-view. I have no idea who's going to win this. I figured I was going to know when it was just Fish versus Dragon Lee that Bobby was going to continue, but now who knows? This is the hot potato belt right now. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think that I know a lot of people thought that when Will won that it was going to be him versus Dragon Lee. But, you know, past precedent shows that, you know, I mean, they did it last February, which is kind of a tip that when you would think they would still do something different. That you remember when Ishii won the TV title, mm-hmm. then they made it a triple threat. So I don't think Bobby Fish was ever not going to be in this match. But, you know, so they can save the Ospreay Dragon Lee match for down the line. Ospreay signed a contract, so did Marty Scurll, and so they're going to be around. Ospreay's a guy I don't think that needs a belt with his character and his work. So that's another reason why I wasn't terribly surprised they moved it from him, and I don't think he's going to win it back here. And then they have, you know, they'll be able to use Dragon Lee for a while. I think that Bobby Fish is going to move into, again, kind of a spoiler, but it's VOD, not TV. You know, he won Survival of the Fittest, so he has a title shot in hand. I think he's going to move to that. And then I do think that Marty Scurll is going to retain here, actually. And he'll kind of, as he comes into Ring of Honor also, like I mentioned, that he'll be the heel TV champ for the first couple of months in 2017. Now, I will say that, you know, as the internet is wont to do, you know, Ring of Honor is very, usually very deliberate with how they do title reigns, and there's never hot shots. So, of course, when they do this in 2 days to mix things up, it's immediately like, well, this really devalues the TV title belt. First off, neither Ospreay or Marty devalue any belt. It's not like they gave it to, you know, Joey Dadiego or something on a fluke and then moved it off him. Like, they're not devaluing this belt, which they built really well. And we've talked about this on the show before, where TV, you know, and that's why guys like this can, you know, be proud. This isn't some throwaway WWE secondary belt. You know, this is a big deal. But I think they could get it. I thought it was actually pretty cool that they did that type of booking to kind of add some, inject some energy into the UK tours, which, you know, by all accounts, you know, seem to do pretty well attendance-wise, too.
Well, absolutely. And you have, in this match, three of the hottest international names out there over the last year. Actually, the last 2 years, I'd say, on Ospreay, Scurll, and Dragon Lee, and all three of them making their pay-per-view debut for the company in a high-stakes matchup, in, you know, the second match from the top of the card. In terms of title, so like, yeah, I don't get that part either. I was surprised that Scurll won it, but back, you know, from Ospreay just a couple days later. But I again get why they do that, and you know, their Ring of Honor is trying to compete with, you know, WWE on some level because they're losing their guys. You know, they have to figure out new ways to have people in the company. And so they've banked on their relationship with New Japan for the last 5 years to hook up with CMLL, to go to England, and they are an international touring company now. Obviously on a lesser scale than WWE, but they have to do something to keep that reputation of having like the quote-unquote workers in there, and they're not able to keep up with the U.S. stuff, so they've gone internationally, and it seems to be working for them.
Yeah, I think it was a good counter to, you know, losing some talent this year. You know, like Roddy Strong, and not that Roddy had anything to prove there, and I'm glad that, you know, he got the opportunity, and I know the office was too. You know, but like Moose and some other guys that, whereas I kind of made a comment that you were thinking back to like 2015, the end of that year, like the roster seemed a little bit better than what it is right now from a touring standpoint, like those Florida shows we talked about and the cards they were doing. But, you know, you inject in, and I'm going to give Chad credit for this. He would have said it if he was here. You know, Ospreay is really, you know, the hottest wrestling free agent in 5 years. That's mm-hmm. Chad's direct line. He's not wrong. Right. So, you know, and I know that Paul Heyman presented him an Evolve contract, like kind of out of the blue, but he has his New Japan ties. And with that relationship, kind of Ring of Honor's in there. And I know that they were pursuing him too. And you know, Sinclair does have money and more than Evolve does. And so, you know, it was cool to see Ring of Honor get those two wins like that and have those guys and be contracted. So, you know, they're going to be full time next year. So a lot of travel for them over to the States.
Yeah. And I'm really excited about that possibility. You know, some of those house shows, you're not going to get Ospreay, Scurll, you know, Dragon Lee, Cody Rhodes, Kushida, Liger. You're not going to be getting those all in Milwaukee, say. But you might get one. You might get two.
Yeah, you don't know. And you know, they bring them in for a weekend. They hit a couple shows, man. That's how they do it, you know.
And that keeps the market fresh.
They get those triple dates, and then they end up in, you know, Wisconsin.
Ah, it'll be so sweet. Can finally get my Ospreay Scurll Beer City Bruiser three-way that no one's ever wanted.
There you go. Sadly, the Bruiser was not on the card. I haven't seen him in a while, so.
Yeah, you can't miss him. So a world championship match. I am so pumped about this match. This is the rest of the stuff is just, you know, kind of put me over the edge and wanting to buy it. But this is the main attraction. Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, you know, a match that has been, you know, since the beginning that they both kind of came in together, it's been building to this. Cole always seems to get the one up. I firmly believe that O'Reilly is going to win. Every time I think that I know what I'm talking about, I get proven wrong. So expect Cole to win, but I'm 100% behind O'Reilly winning at this point. I feel that it's his time. I did a show of Rank and File that should be coming out soon, and I talked Kyle O'Reilly's 2016 in Japan and Ring of Honor up pretty high with his matches, you know, with Shibata, which were top notch. You just mentioned the Silas Young match, just bulking up for the match, and you think something's going on. So unless he's planning on moving somewhere else, I feel like he's going over, and I'm really excited for the way they've built this match. The one thing that Ring of Honor has done well is that they've really done a good job in focusing on their championship and the main event picture. There's sometimes where on the undercard they might be switching things back and forth, and you know, people, you know, might not have a good program at any time, or any program for that matter. But this is where they really focus. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree. And this is a great example of kind of that long-term booking and storytelling that Ring of Honor does. Not everybody's cup of tea. But to first your point with, you know, when they focus on the title like this, that's usually equals a pay-per-view buy for me. You know, when we previewed Best in the World, that wasn't a buy for me. I wasn't really feeling Lethal Briscoe with like 3 weeks of build. You know, I did feel, and we predicted it on here too, that the Adam Cole Jay Lethal one was really into that pay-per-view, did a nice job building that title match. You know, while the title was secondary with All-Star Extravaganza, the ladder match is a big deal. It was a great show. Right there as maybe the best of the year, it was a good buy. And then here, you have the culmination of their year, and they really, you know, Delirious did a nice job with this one in planning it out, right? So we already have their history. It even goes back to last year, Final Battle, right? So they do the triple threat, and Adam Cole takes the pin in that here. And then their feud, you know, they feuded earlier this year without a belt, obviously, and O'Reilly won. That feud, Supercard of Honor, night two, you know, maybe questionable when they wanted to blow that off on like a second day of a weekend. It wasn't a pay-per-view. But they did it like that. And then, so when Cole turned heel, which we talked about on the show too, and how that kind of refreshed him, you always had O'Reilly in that lurking. And then remember, you know, they cost O'Reilly the belt against Lethal and the build up to Best in the World. And injured his shoulder, which is the shoulder that, you know, they kind of played off in a while. So it's really been like a year-long booking to bring it back to O'Reilly now beating him again and this time taking the belt. So, yeah, you know, a pretty good long-term story. I'm invested in it too. I've had I'm excited for this one a lot, just like you are.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, year-end, and, you know, here we are. Final Battle, we'll have a TV taping right after that, and that's kind of it for a bit. What are your, you know, a couple thoughts maybe that you have, just kind of to wrap up the year looking back? You know, we've mentioned about the big international signings and how a lot of people, you know, left, you know, Strong left, have been with the company for years. Moose, Bennett was another one, ACH, Cedric. They have all these new people coming in, a lot of younger guys that they've, you know, had at their JoJo, a lot of the international guys. Outside of that, like, what are a couple, a couple steps, as Scott Criscola would say, of Ring of Honor for 2016 that you wanted to just bring up?
Well, I think tying more into what you kind of hinted on before with CMLL and New Japan, and I know that there's some kind of, you know, how much more buzz can you have on with the New Japan guys coming, are there diminishing returns with it? I don't think that it's a negative, and I do think that they are draws and boost more, and I think that they've done a pretty good job of pay-per-views that didn't have them in there. But so I think that tie is really important because of the whole WWE machine and kind of being able to bring in these different groups and kind of – because, look, you know, they're always going to be up against – you know, guys wanting to go to NXT, on year-to-year deals. So how far do you get behind somebody? You know, Nate and I talked about before, like, you know, iFantasy booked Moose to, like, a great Ring of Honor reign. But honestly, you know, the guy had bigger dreams than that, and I get it, right? So that's kind of a tough thing they have. And so when contracts come up, as they're going to every year, it kind of always leaves some uncertainty. But I think they've done a pretty good job of filling in with those international, you know, and the two big signings in October are important, where, you know, the train's going to keep moving on. The company's not going anywhere. You know, attendance was, you know, in the beginning of the year, you know, things were looking good year over year. And I think some of the second half of the year, maybe they weren't drawing as well as they would have liked to. So that kind of hit. But I'm curious now with this infusion of new people. I think it's going to be the real story. Is I think Final Battle is going to do really well. It's going to be a great show. It's a good way to cap the year for them. And then it'll be interesting as they build into 2017. I don't think there's going to be any change in creative, as some people would opine that they wish there would be. I actually think that since our friend Kevin Kelly came on, I think it's been understated how the organization and the communication issues that were real prevalent, you know, during the Global Wars, War of the Worlds, that's when things really started to heat up. Some reports in The Observer after a lot of pressure into, like, things that weren't being reported. And that's when they brought Kevin in to kind of project manage and be a liaison there. And I think that that immediately showed dividends with some of the tapings and things they were doing. And I think they kind of went through the summer with the Cole title reign, and they've had a lot of good ideas. And maybe, you know, as we see with when big changes like this, it's not like overnight, like hundreds of more people are going to show up. So maybe as a result of the earlier in the year booking, you know, the attendances were down, but now they have a chance with this new talent to kind of to kick it back in. And I think that we'll see that, you know, in 2017, where I hope we do. I think that's a stepping stone, if that's kind of in your words there, for them for this year.
And I'm hoping that we see a little bit more, you know, like you said, with Kevin aboard, and you're even seeing it, you know, with the TV shows, like it's a little bit different. There's a little bit, you know, the last few weeks, there's been more backstage talking, you know, like with the Cabana Castle angle, you know, a couple of the stuff happened in the locker room. A little bit different from just here's a match or someone sitting at the announce table trying to get the angle over. I hope they flesh out more of the mid-car stories where you don't see, you know, the regulars just disappear for months at a time because right. The crossovers with Japan, that they have something to do and not just, you know, or start a story. I remember the one with like Prince Nana giving the envelopes to Caprice Coleman, Will Ferrara, and, yeah. And Dijak. And there was a payoff for Dijak, but Caprice just went somewhere else, and Will Ferrara just – he grew a beard. That was about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that was it. It's so tough with that because to your point, so similar back to the territory days, right, when you had guys taking tours to Japan, you know, War Machine, they're doing the tag league. They're not on Final Battle. They had their big feud that – again, was paid off. And, you know, I get they want to boost DVD and VOD sales. That makes sense. Maybe something where they show that match against, you know, Lee and Taylor on TV later on. But yeah, so that is interesting to book against. And again, I think they're always going to kind of be, there's only so many stories you can run unless you're utilizing things like social media and YouTube. And that's tricky too, because everybody knows it's wrestling and they want to suspend their disbelief. So when you kind of move into that things, it's kind of like, okay, you know, so it doesn't always work great with it, but it's tough when you only have, you know, 4 hours of TV that you can tape at a time and kind of flushing those things out for it. So I think that, it'll be interesting. I would like to see that as a stepping stone too. I think that can be challenging, but maybe there's some other ways where they can get those kind of mid-card feuds over.
And if nothing else, Brad, with your relationship with Joe Koff, you know, maybe they'll bring you in and you can work on some of that stuff.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing Joe. I'm going to be going to the tapings most likely after Final Battle in Philadelphia, so I'm hoping to see all those guys.
Excellent. Well, Brad, as always, thank you for coming on. It's always a pleasure to talk wrestling with you. We'll have to get Brad and Chad on the show together. Maybe 2019. We can look at that.
Yeah, 19 sounds good.
All right, well, we'll be back. Headlines, clotheslines and headlines. I'm getting tired. we'll bring it back. We'll wrap things up. And, hey, maybe I'll be thankful that the taping's over. Kitchen door.
better not let him in.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Welcome back to Clotheslines and Headlines, Episode 12, our Thanksgiving Spectacular. You know we got beans, greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, ram, ham hocks, and so much more. You want it, you got it, you name it. It's the Godfather, along with JR, the great Steve Willie, and of course, Brother Brad, here this Thanksgiving week.
Brother Brad is the only ham hock I need in my life.
But I think what we're going to do in this segment, boys, as we wrap things up this week, is go around this table that we've got here, this wonderful spread here at the Place to Be Nation Studios, and talk about what we've been thankful for in 2016 in the world of professional wrestling.
Brad, you're our guest, man. You're guest first in our home. Why don't you start us off?
It was technically my home. The building's mine. But thank you for having me, though. Yeah, I there is one thing I'm really thankful for, and I'm not going to use it to plug the site or my friends that are on the line, is really all the options we have to watch wrestling now. And so we recently had, Flow Slam, and we have things on the horizon like Powerbomb TV, and you have New Japan World, and possibly other promotions coming out with other streaming things or consolidating. And really right now is, if you're not happy with how Brock Lesnar's 3-year run ended in WWE, you can just stick to New Japan and Ring of Honor and maybe CMLL as they're tied in or Rev Pro in England. There's a lot of, English promotions out there that you can follow too. There's so much you can follow and be invested in, and we have so little time as it is that you can go, if you're not feeling the payoffs, you don't have to watch 3 months of TV. You just check out the big events if you want. No big deal. There's plenty of stuff to follow out there. Even though, NXT maybe waned a little bit and they're still plucking guys, I still think that the indie scene is really good right now. And there's a lot out there and there's a lot of ways to watch it now too. And I think that that's something I'm pretty thankful for.
Steve?
Yeah. Brad kind of stole a little bit what I've gone through, but I am thankful for live wrestling. I'll be going to see Chikara in a couple of weeks for the final battle. First time I've ever seen that, and it's the first time I've seen them in about a year and a half, 2 years. And just the family and friends that I have kind of made through wrestling. It's been about 20 years now since I found my good friends in Milwaukee. Shout out to Matt, Jamie, and Andy, who are probably listening. Better be listening, otherwise I'm going to slap them when I see them at Chikara. And of course, the guys who are all here at Place to Be Nation, who are good friends. Like, I never thought I'd travel across the country to go see wrestling with a giant group and sit in a luxury box in Brooklyn and just make all these just wacky, disparate group of friends. And it's the community that really drives wrestling for me. It's come a long way since like having to sit in shame in your room by yourself watching it and wondering if anyone else likes this hobby of yours.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thankful. It's kind of a combination of what you guys said, but I mean, just the availability, the options, the outlets to discuss it, even if some are awful, like they're still there. And it's just great. I mean, it's to be able to have a voice. And if you think back, just like you said, Steve, 15, 16-year-old, just I had like 25 tapes or not even of stuff to watch over. And, it's like the same stuff you watch at that time because it just wasn't that much available. And then you think to today where just so many different things you can watch and anything you want, old, new, from around the world. You know, it's instantaneous or on a delay. You know, like there's so many great options and great ways to watch wrestling that even if you're disenfranchised with the way WWE's doing things or their current booking event, you know, or whatever, there's always something else to watch and there's always a place to read or talk about it. And that's what's been great about 2016 from a wrestling perspective. I mean, has it, you know, and I would say something we touched on earlier too is the quality that you get. It's not just tons of hours. It's really good. It's even if Raw is a slog, you could pick like 45 minutes worth of stuff probably to watch out of each week. That's better than most years I had, you know, in a total week. So it's like, there's so much good stuff out there. Even just beyond how much there is, there's the quality of it that we just didn't exist until these last few years. It's such a readily available clip.
Let's see. First of all, thanks to Brother Brad for providing this spread. It is so much more than Snoopy's Thanksgiving feast of popcorn, jelly beans, and Wonder Bread. I'm thankful for Nia Jax because that's proof that there is a God. I'm thankful for the WWE Network, as much as we kind of slag on it, to have something in this day and age, and again, touching on points that all of you have brought up, that there's so much on demand at our fingertips, access to current stuff, classic stuff, stuff that we didn't even know existed. And it's a blessing of technology. It's amazing, and it's a great time to be a fan, not just of pro wrestling, but of anything, that we can have this communal aspect. You know, you talk about social media and its effect. And yeah, there's a lot of bad people and terrible individuals on social media. But for the most part, I think if you put good vibes out there, you find good people on social media. And I think I'm most thankful maybe that there are places for these people that we watch, these guys and girls every week, to ply their trade. Now, whether that's an AJ Styles getting a shot in the WWE, which is something that a lot of us never thought we'd see, especially to the extent that he's been showcased, or if it's something as simple as, or not so simple, considering how much time we spent talking about it this year, something as simple as TNA surviving and being able to have somebody like Anthem Sports back them up so that we can get the variety in this business, things like the Hardys and Final Deletion, that would not be available otherwise, or at least not be available to this extent and to this degree. So I'm just thankful that in this country, which has seen a lot of hemming and hawing and discussion over the past couple of weeks about freedoms and what it means to be American, I'm thankful that we got the freedom, man, just to enjoy this type of stuff, man, and have opinions and, you know, be able to debate these opinions in a productive manner and put out some good work for the people out there to listen to. So I'm thankful for all these things, and let's do it again next year.
All right, real quick roundtable, Brad. Favorite Thanksgiving memory growing up?
Oh, man, growing up, probably, probably going up to my grandparents' house and, like, playing, like, Atari football and Atari baseball. And around everybody. That's the first one that popped in my head there. So we're going back to like 88, 87 there, 86 maybe. So it's pretty good.
Steve?
Let's see. I would say, yeah, going to grandma's house, my dad's side of the family. You have like 25, 30 people there. Sometimes we play a little Trivial Pursuit, and it would be the one time that you can kind of get in on the adult conversation as a kid. And, you know, wrestling-wise, yeah, I remember watching a couple of Class of the Champions around that time. It's so far long ago, I don't remember exact dates of stuff, like in the 80s. But I have memories of sitting at my aunt's house on the floor with a big family gathering watching Clash of the Champions.
Yeah, for me, we always had Thanksgiving at my house, so that was always really cool, like not having to go out and the anticipation of everyone coming over. There were a couple of years, 93 and 94, since my birthday, it was like a week after Thanksgiving, my parents let me order Survivor Series and have some friends over on Thanksgiving Eve, which was like, so those couple of years always stood out for me, where it was a lot of excitement to have everyone over, a couple friends like stayed over after the show, and then Thanksgiving morning, everyone, you know, all my family came over and stuff. So those couple of years really stand out as being really fun between the excitement of Survivor Series / like birthday party and then into Thanksgiving. How about you, Nate?
Thanks. Thanksgiving and wrestling are pretty crazy. They're strange bedfellows because we've got the greatness of Survivor Series, but we've also got those annual Gravy Bowl matches on SmackDown. And we've
got, and I miss those.
Yeah, those had a special place in my heart. We also had the turkey suit matches on TNA, which I think they're going to do again for some damn reason. But it's about that community, like you guys are talking about. And you know, my family was a military family. My father's a retired Navy captain, and so we would either be on the road traveling to relatives, or we'd be in a new place, you know, whether that's Okinawa, Japan, or Norfolk, Virginia, or Rhode Island, or San Diego, California. And so, you know, having family around and family that puts up with your wrestling fandom, that's always something to be thankful for.
Rhode Island. So, Nate, we could have crossed paths at some point when you were younger?
It's quite possible.
Hmm. Look at that. All right, guys. I think we'll wrap things up. Another spirited episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. Hope everyone enjoyed it. Hope everyone has a great, happy, and healthy Thanksgiving week. Enjoy it. One of the best weeks of the year. This kind of brings an end to our week here at Police to Be Nation. We'll have a couple things up Wednesday, Brad, I believe, right? And then kind of maybe.
That's right. Offices are closed on Friday. Please do not ask for new content or podcasts. We are taking the day. Yeah, we will have I'm not sure if we're going to do Match Club this week or not. I think we are, yeah, which will be up too. Friday, actually. Yeah, it's going to be Aztec Warfare.
Chad Campbell takes no days off.
No, he doesn't.
And we always have our Thanksgiving memory pieces we'll probably throw up on Thursday.
Yeah, we'll rebump those up. We've done some good stuff with that, so.
There you go. So everyone look forward to that. Monday night is the big reboot, the Place to Be podcast. Scott and I will be here looking at the January 85 at Madison Square Garden house show. So as we head all the way back to 85 and kind of retrace our steps through the early years of WWF pay-per-view era. So Scott and I will be here Monday with that. And then we'll be back in a couple weeks. At least I won't be, but Nate and Steve will be with Glenn Butler. Looks to be in the big chair, hopefully, that night. So I will be off. So you guys, I will talk to you in a month, but hopefully you'll have a great episode. We'll probably look at TLC. We'll break down what happened that final battle and much, much more. So for Steve and Nate and Brad, I'm JT. We're out. Everyone have a great Thanksgiving. We'll talk in a couple weeks. Take care.
Wait, you have a bigger chair than Nate and me?
Yeah, I mean, that's almost as shocking as the fact that Aaron George was the guy with the Googler.
Hey.